Welcome to Red Talks, a Red Viking podcast. We're committed to bold engineering, and this show brings you industry insights to match. We'll discuss bold ideas from those on the forefront of manufacturing innovation and uncover the journey they walk to bring their ideas to life. Welcome to Red Talks, a Red Viking podcast. Today, we're going to be discussing company culture as the power behind digital transformation. Today, we have with us Remus Pep. He's the technical director at Riveron. Greg Giles, vice president of product development for Red Viking. And Matt Townsend, managing director at Riveron. Welcome, guys, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us, Lexi.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excited for the conversation.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I wanted to first, though, just kind of have you guys introduce yourself and give a little bit of background. Matt, if you want to start.
Sure. So Remus and I work for a company called Riveron. And Riveron is a national business advisory firm that specializes in accounting, finance, technology, and operations. And so our portion of the firm is called Intelligent Manufacturing Solutions. And so what we do is Industry 4.0, as well as some strategy and supporting our clients with their journey. I'll let Remus introduce himself and happy to be here.
Yeah. So like Matt said, we work for a company called Riveron, and within that, the Intelligent Manufacturing Solutions Group focuses on, like Matt said, Industry 4.0 under the umbrella of digital transformation with IIoT kind of part of that. And then again, we help our customers kind of define their strategy of how they're going to take advantage of these new technologies. And my role is to focus a little bit more from a technical side. So defining the architecture, you know, how we're going to actually implement a lot of the technologies that we look at. Thanks for having us. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, and thank you for being here. And then Greg, would you please?
Yeah, definitely. My name is Greg Giles. I'm the Vice President of Product Development here at Red Viking. Most of my career here at Red Viking has been in the solution development space in and around Industry 4.0 type of solutions. I've been doing that type of work, supporting our customers for about 20 plus years now. So half of my responsibility currently is growing our Argonaut platform for implementing IIoT and Industry 4.0 solutions. Thanks for having us, Lexi.
Thanks for being here, Greg.
Fun fact of the podcast, that I, you know, used to work for Greg, what is it now, 6 years ago, 7 years ago?
6 or 7 years ago. Feels like a lifetime.
Feels like a lifetime. And we've stayed quite in touch since then. So I think it's a testament to what you guys are doing here at Red Viking, and the technology that you're building has been one I've taken with me just about everywhere I went. So it's pretty cool to kind of complete the full circle and come back and have this chat. It's a good one.
Happy to have you.
And we're excited to hear about all that you've learned on your journey since being here. So thank you. I wanted to kind of start things off by just asking, you know, a lot of our listeners are still kind of new to this whole idea of IIoT, Industry 4.0, just, you know, asking you to kind of explain what that means to you. It can mean so many things. It's such a broad based term. So
yeah, give us. I think it's good that you mentioned that a lot of people are new to this. And I think that's a trend that we're seeing, especially exacerbated since the pandemic. Obviously, a lot more people are interested in now what's happening with this trend. And I think the way I kind of classify it for me, digital transformation is like that umbrella term, right? If you look across industry, across segment, there's a lot of companies beyond, you know, what we focus on in manufacturing that are taking on this digital transformation, you know, effort, right? Whether it's finance or whether it's HR or whether it's, you know, the number of different industries out there. From our lens, you know, we specifically focus on two of the foundational elements of digital transformation for our clients. Manufacturing is IIoT, which, you know, I kind of quantify as the tangible, the physical world of what we operate in, right? Connecting sensors, connecting PLCs, machines, setting up networks, getting the physical world kind of into that digital environment. And then the second part of that is the Industry 4.0 piece is kind of just the automated exchange of all that data that's now available as we connect all these different sensors. So that's kind of how I classify it in like a high level view, is just, you know, the IIoT being the tangible, the physical, and then the Industry 4.0 piece being that digital environment of the automated connection of data. That's really kind of where I take it. You know, Greg, look like you have a comment there, so I'll let you kind of jump in.
Yeah, it's interesting. I remember going to a conference a couple of years ago and coming from the, you know, automotive and the discrete manufacturing environment, really as recently as, you know, 10 years ago, my blinders were kind of on, and, you know, we felt like we had been doing IIoT like solutions for long before it was called IIoT or Industry 4.0. And then visiting some of the conferences where industry is taking on these types of solutions and realizing, oh, it's not just manufacturing. Oh, it's not just, you know, discrete manufacturing. There are, you know, process people. There are companies that were creating paychecks, companies that were just in industries that I had no idea were interested in this type of transformation. So it's really a trend that's going across, you know, all industry. And I really like the way that you put it, Remus, of kind of separating out the, you know, the physical from the idea and like what you can actually do with that information and data as it comes forward. I think that's a great way to look at the differentiation between IoT and Industry 4.0.
Well, it moved it into a bunch of things, right? So you've also got your smart home as well as your smart environment. Like I saw a beer tap the other day that counted how many hits it took from each individual beer tap. It was all in one. It had multiple kegs running into the one tap. And then as soon as it had, I forget how many ounces is in a keg. As soon as it was at its point, it shot a note to the bartender to go tell somebody to go change the keg without having to run the foam up. So similar idea, exchange that back into the manufacturing world. It's no different. It's smart manufacturing, smart life, smart, I guess, smart everything.
I'm interested to learn about that. Maybe we should have a field trip. You know, do some competitive analysis at this location. Sounds like a plan.
Wasn't that what the, what's that company in Detroit that's doing? It's like a stock market of beer. So as people buy beer within the bar, the prices fluctuate. So if a lot of people start to buy beer, the price goes up. If less people buy it, the price goes down to drive more people to buy it. Obviously, probably driven by some of this technology that we're talking about, but
for sure,
it's a really cool idea.
Otherwise, how would you know?
Yeah.
Unless you have some kind of a tick chart like we did in the old days when everybody used to have a graph at the backside of the machine that said, you know,
I made a part.
Well, not only that, we used to actually go and put a part on a gauge and take the readouts off the gauge and put it on a chart and graph it. Like that was part of our job as a supervisor / operator. Now, all of that, you know, transition is now automated into this whole digital world, right? Where your online SBC, your online gauging, your online process controls, all of those things are all digital and monitored by exception. So as soon as I see something that is not right, I'm going to tell somebody it's not right versus the old way where we used to trend something and you'd have to, you know, put your hand up and tell your supervisor or tell whatever that, hey, I think this is not going in the right direction, but I'm not really quite sure.
Yeah, literally the first job I had in college outside of, you know, landscapes and all that kind of jazz. But the first job I had in industry was working for an OEM manufacturer, literally with a stopwatch, literally on a chair the entire shift, counting not just operator time, but how frequently did a machine go down and why did it go down, and physically writing with a pen and paper, this is what happened, and then going back and transcribing. It's when I think about it, it's hilarious to me that apparently I was industry 1.0, you know, when I first started, and I've made it to 4. So,
well, now there's even talk of 5. So there's room to go.
But the funny part about it is that used to be the real world. Yeah. Like whenever we had a part, a product or whatever that wasn't running right, you would request a snap from your IE department. That was,
you
go down that was the very first thing you did.
Yep.
Now that doesn't exist anymore. You can pick up your phone or do whatever.
It wasn't even that long ago. Cause I remember, when I came into industry, which was only 12, 15 years ago, I remembered it. Also, I didn't do the time studies. I was always on the software side, but working with the you know, the team that was doing the time study, watching them there with the stopwatches to think about it now. Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
I put myself out of work, I guess.
There you go.
Evolved the position. Now we run live reports of where the bottleneck is moving based on what product you're building.
Yeah.
It's neat because I think those charts that we created was, you know, like the Atari or the Commodore 64 version of gamification. And so like Industry 4.0 has really enabled gamification because you can just real time, there's your data, and it can become a friendly competition or I don't want to be the target, you know, like, right. Like I don't want to be the guy who's, you know, doing worse, and it's easy to see. And so you strive to, as a, you know, plant floor guy, strive to
be better.
Be better.
It's no different than the camera / the smartphone now, right? Because like all of those guys who used to do that way back then don't really exist anymore, where Kodak was like the leading camera kind of film, et cetera, whatever. Right. Now that's gone. They had it just adapted with the times, you know, case in point, BlackBerry too, right?
For sure.
So I feel like this is a good spot to transition into my next question for you guys, which is like the adoption of new technologies and sort of what you're talking about here and how we're evolving and how important that is to business value. Like, I know if a lot of companies aren't jumping on board and doing some digital transformation and allowing that easy communication of data back and forth, they're going to fall behind quickly. So can you speak a little bit on that?
Yeah. So, I mean, when we start to engage with some clients, you know, the first question we always ask them is, why do you want to do this project, right? If, don't get me wrong, for me, you know, I'm a technology lover. I would play with the technology all day long if somebody paid me to do it. But ultimately, business value is what drives the projects that we work on. So if there's not, if we're not delivering business value, you know, value to the customer, what's the point, right? So we always start with the conversation of why are we doing this, right? Industry 4.0 is awesome. The tools that we have are cool. We can do all this great stuff. But if we're not actually trying to solve a problem, then it's not going to take off within the company, right? You know, you always hear the adage of if you take technology and try to find the problem, you're going to have a bad time. Whereas if you start with the problem and then look at how we can take technology and apply it and solve that problem, then we generally, you know, are a lot more successful. So typically that's kind of how we look at it, is ultimately it's business value is the driver, right?
I think at Red Viking, and I'm sure you guys see this at Riveron as well, we still have a lot of initial engagement with customers come down to kind of the industry 3.0 type of concern. So the initial conversation might be, I want to monitor it all to know how many parts I made, and I want to monitor these kind of things. And those types of solutions were totally possible, and we were doing them well before Industry 4.0 and IIoT technologies. I think the customers that find the biggest value and where they really embrace the new technology is they realize that this, the Industry 4.0 and the technology available today really enables more solutions and more possibilities than just how well did I run. It really enables rapid decision-making to come from the top floor down to the shop floor and from the shop floor up to the top floor. So for example, you know, the three of us have worked together on projects where we've collected information, enabled AI systems to actually process data real time and push decisions back to a plant floor, which never would have been possible before these technologies. So it's embracing beyond just the monitoring and what's going on, what has happened, and really pushing into what's going to happen.
So obviously there's a lot of business value in what you do, and it can be a game changer for manufacturers, organizations. But where do you start when it comes to getting cultural buy-in, like from the top floor to the shop floor? Who do you talk to? How do you start? That's, you know, if you don't have the buy-in, then they're not using the tool and it's not really going to work. So
When I think of that question, I always go back to a pitch that we did very early on when we started our gig at Riveron. And I remember talking to this client, and they were very focused on ROI. And, you know, he sat there and he asked, he said, what is my ROI going to be if I deploy Industry 4.0 technology? And I said, the answer I gave him, well, that's entirely up to you. Right. I mean, all the data in the world is not going to do anything if you can't change the way you do business. Right. So understanding that there is a lot of culture behind it, I think, and a lot of that has to come, you know, we talk about top floor, shop floor. I think a lot of that has to start at the top floor. Right. The people that are driving the business value have to understand that the shift in culture is really tangible. But you have to understand that, you know, just putting the dashboard up isn't going to do anything. You actually have to teach people how to do that. And in that teaching process, you're going to see that the culture will automatically change along with it, right? Empowering an operator to have more information to be more successful at their job, it's not the big brother thing that a lot of people fear it is. It's actually just making their life easier. Mm-hmm. And as you start to drill that mentality down, you'll see the culture start to change along with it.
Yeah, I think it takes a visionary. So at the onset, if you're coming from a greenfield or a brownfield site where you haven't had these technologies, in my opinion, require a visionary or a leader to have a future state vision, to want to drive. I mean, just like any business, you want to drive for a desired state. What we've seen time and time again, you know, I think Remus, you kind of alluded to it, was on the shop floor, we see some people thinking like, oh, here it comes again, another way for the man to beat me down kind of attitude. But like, as far as the cultural across the entire organization, as long as you're empowering your employees to make better, more rapid decisions, they start to see that value. So we did error-proofing type of solutions in the past, where on day one, it starts off like, oh, great, they're going to watch me and see how good I do. And on day five, the people that don't have the solution are doing a slow rollout. The people who don't have the solution yet realize like, hey, man, you know, the guys who have the solution, they're not getting asked by their supervisors what's going on. They're able to do their job. They're doing it better. you know, they're not being bugged. And people start asking. So instead of it being a pushing these things and these technologies out, it becomes a pull. And mm-hmm. it's really exciting when that transition happens. You can see it often.
They're taking ownership of their own role and what they're responsible for.
They're empowered.
Yeah, empowered.
Right. Yes, so I think the employer is empowered to be a better employee.
And then if you take the manufacturing engineering side of it, it helps to generate what that operational excellence list is supposed to look like. So half the process engineers in the planet today are just firefighters. They get a call from the floor. They got to go fix something. Something's not right. Something's running out of control.
Get the axe, whatever. Get the helmet. Yeah. Get the
exactly what it is all day. You know, the blend between, you know, the process engineers and maintenance today is overlapping. So this now gives a tool for the maintenance, manufacturing, process engineers to say, okay, I know that I've had this number of occurrences and this amount of downtime or this whatever on this line is constantly occurring at this. Go fix that and then move to the next and move to the next. And then that in turn goes right up to, you talk about the top floor, that goes right to the CFO that says, okay, if I need X amount of dollars to go from my plant to be X amount of profit to this amount of profit, that equals is time, right? Basically, time and material is 80% of everything, especially in the automotive world, of what you're going to spend. Fix the time by fixing the equipment. It'll fix the material. It'll fix everything. And then all of a sudden, you've now got a much better top line, and the world just keeps on evolving from there.
Yeah, it has to be deliberate too. So when we talk to our clients, we talk a lot about technology. Obviously, you know, it's what we're talking about here. But there's a whole division, a whole group within our group that focuses on the cultural side, right? Developing what we call our policy deployment, right? Like, how do we actually take the technology and teach the business how to use it? You know, so there's a whole part of that. And I think, you know, thinking about it, that a lot of it happens by happenstance, but some of it has to be deliberate, right? There has to be an effort created to fundamentally get that culture change started. And then you'll see that waterfall effect from there.
And if you don't have the client / business, put that as a forward focus, your project will die. It's that simple.
It's really interesting because I get this question a lot. And like, how do you get somebody to think about Industry 4.0? And honestly, in the last couple of years in doing these pitches and talking to a lot of different customers, I feel from what I've seen so far, if someone isn't already kind of interested in this and already looking at some digital transformation effort, it's a really, really hard sell. And I think that kind of talks to how hard it is and why companies are maybe afraid to kind of go down this journey mm-hmm. is because if you're not already thinking about it and you're trying to sell somebody on the value of digital transformation Industry 4.0, it's really difficult. But on the flip side of that, if somebody has at least started to poke into it, then there's the accelerator there happens immediately, right? If they're already looking for, you know, that where to start with it and everything, then you've kind of already got your in. And then the next piece is just showing them the possibilities, right? The art of the possible starts to really play in there. And I think that's kind of one of those cultural things that we see a lot.
I think once, if they've thought about it, they've started thinking about the value.
Yeah.
And that's from a technology standpoint, you know, we can connect the dots, right? But you know, I think our, you know, Remus, you and I kind of come from a similar background where we maybe, you know, you talked about the, right, the paycheck company or the film company that's doing Industry 4.0. Like, I've never worked for a paycheck processing company. I don't understand what value can be derived. I can implement technology. So without that vision of what the end state goal is, what the objective is, it's tough. And so that's where I think where people have started thinking about it. They probably started thinking, it would be neat if I could
make this easier.
Yeah, fill in the blank. Make this easier. Make it faster. Make it better. Make it with better quality. Mm-hmm. The technology part, I'm not going to say is easy, but you know, that's where, you know, pros like Riveron and Red Viking help. The industry specific goal, I think, is really important, and that's a vision.
Yeah.
So one of the things you mentioned earlier was the big brother piece and kind of getting over that hump, and that's something that I know that Red Viking has struggled with in the past too, right? You kind of like open up the floodgates and allow for everybody to see a lot of information. How do you kind of get people past that?
Yeah, I think a big piece is just to include them, right?
Yeah.
You know, we talk about that, you know, the policy deployment piece, and part of that is including different parts of the organization, right? Include HR. HR often gets overlooked too, but we have to think of them because we're delivering technology that is going to be directly impactful to your workforce, right? So all of these things are going to be used, managed, developed, seen by all of your workforce. So HR is a common piece that we get left out, but Yeah, I just say you just make sure they're included, right? Go down and talk to the operators. Ask them what their challenges are. Ask them their opinion of what would make your life easier. And then when they answer with, oh, it'd be great if we could do this, right? If we could do that, if this was faster, if I didn't have to hit this thing with a hammer every couple hours because of, you know, whatever the issue is. So getting their input, and then the answer to that from us is always, well, that's what we're doing, right? We're trying to make your job easier, life easier. We're not using this as a tool to reprimand you. This is a tool to make us more efficient, make your life better, that whole thing. I think that's our approach really is just inclusivity, right? Add them to the conversation, make them feel valued, and show them that they are valued, right? Their input, nobody knows that piece of equipment better than the person that stands in front of it 8 to 10 hours a day.
Yeah. And then I think that on the backside of that, when you start, like, I think Matt, you had mentioned, like, you got that data now that you can say, like, this happens. I can't count on both of my hands how many times I've heard from an operator of something along the lines of, man, I've been having this problem forever. And until we had this data collection system, nobody would listen to me. Yeah. But now there's proof.
Yep.
Like, I can't do this job. I have to try 10 times. And everybody says, no, it's just you. It's not a BP.
Yeah.
They're able to prove then that it's not an operator problem. It's a tool problem or a process problem. And so that really helps the cultural adaptation when people realize that.
Or the best one is when you walk by a piece of equipment that's not running, you say to the operator, why did it stop?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Changes from, I don't know.
Yeah.
Or how long has it been stopped?
I think we've all seen the big stick on the side of a machine too that they got to use to put it through the safety gate to hit a button or knock a switch on track or something like that. So,
or has anybody called maintenance?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Did you? Well, yeah. How long ago? Well, now I know. Yes, yeah. Somebody called maintenance. And yes, it was 2 minutes ago. And they're typically here in 3 minutes because we have that data now.
Yeah.
Or to have the machine call maintenance directly by its own.
Yeah.
When it can.
Absolutely.
And it seems like what you were saying, Matt, earlier, too, that not only does it allow for fast communication when a machine breaks down, but it also prioritizes the order in which they address an issue.
For sure. You know, every plant has a stand-up meeting that they talk about the issues for the last 8 hours or whatever it was. It now, instead of, you know, we used to use the world Walt Disney, right? Because everybody had a story of what happened. Who knows what the real world was. Took maintenance. You could stand up and you say anything. Yeah, it took maintenance 5 hours to come here and turn that screw. Who knows? Now, when you have digital stand-up meetings, all the information is right there in black and white. It's very, very simple, very easy, and very true of what the real world is.
It's a single source of truth.
Yeah.
There's no longer Matt's story versus Greg's story versus Remus's story.
Right.
There is a story. Now let's answer to it. And let's just focus on getting better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you map that right into your process improvement board or whatever you want to call it in each individual plant. It's very simple. You know, we know we have this problem. We can recognize it. And we can put it on the list and go tackle it. It makes the culture of problem solving now come to the forefront where it is very, very simple, very easy, and very organized.
Yeah. So it simplifies and then it gives everybody the goal, like right in front of them. That's the goal. Focus on that. Specific pain point.
Your original question about what is Industry 4.0, there's a million things that go into between AR, VR, and all the really, really cool trinkety stuff, right? Which is awesome. What we do best is we supply data from equipment for people to make educated decisions to make their plant better. And that's basically the bottom line. And the simple truth is why we do what we do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Delivering information to those who can act upon it the fastest.
All right, great. Podcast over.
And we break the data by consumption, right? Right. Are you a second over second consumer? Are you a day over day? Are you a month over month? Mm-hmm. And so our data translation segregates itself to how you consume the data. So, now you can wrap your head.
That's a wrap. Well, that's all like really interesting. And I'm just kind of digesting all of it. But besides the cultural buy-in piece, so I think we did a good job sort of tackling that question. What are like some of the other big issues that you face as an integrator, you know, beyond getting, you know, the buy-in from the top floor and the shop floor?
Yeah, I think one that we run into, and I think if there's any manufacturing folks listening, they'll probably share the pain point is that.
Well, I can guess what you're going
to say. Yeah, right. Without even me saying it, it's IT, right? Like our biggest struggle still to this day is getting IT buy-in, right? If the project hasn't originated from the IT side, and which lately it hasn't, it's mostly driven by our operations leaders. getting that IT buy-in and getting their support and understanding of this, you know, the buzzword that's going to come out, IT-OT convergence, right? Having them understand that the manufacturing environment is bleeding into their environment and vice versa, right? And getting the operations in a lot of cases, understanding that IT technology is bleeding into their environment. So navigating that so far for me has always been the biggest challenge. Like it, every single client we talk to, every single manufacturing customer, every single cross industry, cross everything, getting that understanding between the IT and the operations group that they now have to work together in a you know, single goal. And for me has been the biggest challenge for sure.
Yeah, that is interesting. I feel like in some places that's changing, but in a lot of places it's not. And I really do. Speaking from, you know, different experiences, the role of IT sometimes is not really well defined because and it's not common, you know, in some organizations, IT's responsibility is, you know, deliver physical equipment that's connected and communicating, but not application. And in some, it's, you know, IT can range from keeping the applications running to having application professionals. And really, you know, it varies. You know, the drive for security today, totally understand it. And that's a tremendous challenge facing IT. So I understand
their hesitancy.
The hesitancy. Mm-hmm. You know, there's certainly a pendulum. And it's hard to say where the pendulum is between the speed of OT and the reluctance of IT.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. It's a challenge, and it's interesting because it's unique in every instance.
Yeah.
How the relationship forms and how it goes. I think as a recommendation, having that project champion who brings organizationally the team together to realize why a project's ongoing, what the goal of the project is, and then to make sure that everybody has a clear path to define a joint win.
Yeah.
And as long as that can be established, I think we're able to work to good solutions. However, if it's an afterthought where, you know, we've been on projects where it's totally OT driven and it kind of comes in the last minute. Oh, yeah, by the way, we got to put a server somewhere. And oh, yeah, by the way, that's got to be on a network.
I mean,
if it comes last minute, it's a tremendous.
It's gone so far with some customers that we've seen, and there's more than one where they've been so frustrated with their IT organization, they've actually spun up their own shadow IT and started building their own cloud infrastructure and device connectivity to literally operate outside of the company's IT because IT can't keep up. And I've seen it the other way around too, where the IT wants to drive the stuff, but they can't get the buy-in from the operational group because they're stuck in the way they've been doing it for the last 20 years. So it definitely, like Greg said, it's a pendulum that we see. And even within a customer, you go from plant one to plant two, might be completely different environments and completely different relationships.
Different way you handle it.
Yeah, it's a really bizarre thing that we see, and it's constantly a challenge every single day. It's something I have to navigate every single day.
So in history, like those two groups were pretty siloed. Like if before digital transformation and connectivity, those two groups seemed to work pretty much on their own, right?
Yeah, I mean, so there was a very physical separation, you know, 20 years ago, right? There was no integration between IT and OT. OT would bring equipment in, they'd place the equipment on the floor, they'd bring operators in to run the equipment, and the integration was a piece of paper prints at the beginning of the day, says, this is what I got to do. I put a circle around it. I highlight it. I make 10 copies and I give it to my production team. At the end of the day, I collect pieces of paper. I give them to Sue in accounting and she physically enters the data into the IT system. There was no connection.
Yeah, or a bubble card or whatever.
Or a bubble card or whatever.
To generate off of what the shop floor made or built.
Or claimed to have made.
Correct.
Right? So it's a new problem. It's a semi-new problem that the world is still hashing out and how to converge those two worlds. Mm-hmm. So it's changing and it's, I don't know, it's
interesting to watch
and it's fun.
Yeah. I think that it also shows that, like, you know, it is a big topic because you're seeing more than ever. And it, obviously, you know, if you're on LinkedIn for 5 seconds, you'll see it too. Microsoft is heavily investing into this space, and so is Amazon, right? Traditionally, those companies would not be anywhere near a manufacturing shop floor. But now you have equipment connected directly to AWS or Microsoft Cloud, feeding data in real time from the shop floor right into, you know, cloud architecture. So it's just driving
that. Is that how you get same day deliveries now?
Honestly, probably, right? Yeah, I'm sure there's some integration from, I would be interested to see what an AWS factory floor looks like and what their integration to their cloud services is. I'm sure it's probably pretty expansive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
and streamlined. Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
That's why there's a warehouse every 50 feet now.
Yeah. It's wild.
So beyond that, what do you think are like some of the other biggest trends you're seeing in the industry right now and sort of like the biggest pain points?
Yeah. So that's a perfect transition because I think a lot of the trends we see are focused on resolving or helping that pain point of the IT-OT bridge, right? Like there's a lot lately, I've seen a lot more IIoT focused on, right? What we talked about earlier, the tangible piece, sensors that can stream data right from their own existence into the cloud, right? Normally, you know, traditionally you'd have to plug a sensor into an IO rack. IO rack would be connected to the PLC. The PLC would collect the data and then some system would pull the data out of the PLC. You're seeing, I think, more and more instances of low cost, non-invasive solutions where we can just bolt a sensor onto a piece of equipment, monitor that data and get meaningful insights off of a vibration sensor, right? That's just attached to a CNC spindle that can tell us we're running, we're not running, we're working, we're not working. Or another one I saw the other day was a coupler that's connected to the power source of a CNC machine that can tell you, determine off power consumption, what cycle of the machine is in. So I think you're seeing a lot of that is a trend that I see more and more lately is just, you know, low cost, low invasive, a way to get really quick, actionable data off of a piece of equipment.
For utilization only.
Yeah.
And then as you need more stuff, more data, more process data, more actionable data, it then has to move from something non-invasive to something that is actually physically communicating with your process.
Well, I think it too, it broadens the customer base of who's interested in this technology too, right? Like not everybody has the money to fully invest in a giant digital transformation effort to pull in all different types of technology and tie their shop floor into ERP and pull down production work orders and do AI and ML and all that. Somebody just wants, a lot of companies just want to know, hey, is that piece of equipment running as much as it should?
Is it being utilized?
Yeah, is it being utilized, right? So we now have a very low cost, a lot of different low cost solutions that we can get to that type of data without having to make the investment up front of building a server rack, putting a server rack in the building, hiring IT staff to manage that server rack. I can just plug in the sensor, send data to AWS or Microsoft, and away we go.
You know, next to that, I think that, you know, as my IT half of my brain hears like, oh, distributed sensors and oh my gosh, and all these, you know, little devices calling back home to the cloud. One of the biggest things that I've been focusing on recently is basically the CI/CD, so the continuous integration, continuous deployment of updates and basically firmware changes to the plant floor, both from a security update perspective as well as an application update perspective, and how to in the manufacturing space safely do system updates. When we look at like something like a vibration sensor, you know, that you can pretty safely push an update to. And if it goes offline and you lose vibration data for a couple seconds, it's probably not that big of a deal if you're just streaming that data up. But when we look at decision-making equipment, things that are maybe directing the path of something on the factory floor, that becomes a much bigger challenge. And so, you know, I've been spending a lot of effort on how to solve that problem. How do we make sure that the correct software is deployed to the correct place? And when updates are done, that those updates are done at the right time. So that's I think having that defined and having that well documented and understood will really help the buy-in from the IT side that we're not putting in sensors that are going to, you know, create a security challenge, that they are going to be updated, that they are running the appropriate software, that they haven't been compromised or otherwise, they're not causing a security hole, basically. That's a big challenge to me. And that's something that we focus on a lot here.
Yeah. So it sounds like you can go in and get little wins and, you know, like you said, put some sensors on some equipment and see some, hopefully some really impactful things come from that. And then slowly sort of transform as you go more and more equipment. Is that how a lot of manufacturers are doing it? Or?
Yeah. I mean, very few do we see try to boil the ocean right off the start, right? It's let's get the quick win, a small win that we can show value from, right? And, you know, we had a conversation with some colleagues the other day that was talking about, we don't want to call it pilot anymore. We don't want to call it proof of concept anymore. It's now proof of value, right? We have to show that there's value behind what we're doing beyond just, you know, putting on some cool technology and showing that, hey, we can do this. It's now, we did that. What's the value, right? What value to the business did we drive? It kind of just ties back to what we were talking about earlier. It's just, it's interesting to see how this is all getting taken in. It's a really, really crazy time to be part of this industry. That's for sure.
Yeah, I like that term. I haven't heard that before. That's great. I'm going to steal it. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I stole it from who told it to me. So we'll keep the theft ring going.
And the other part too, it is not every piece of equipment's on the network.
Yeah.
We talked about network a minute ago. So sometimes the place that you want to go first needs a lot of work to get it to operate in a digital world. And that's kind of where our expertise comes in is, you know, we feel like we're a bunch of data plumbers for some older equipment where it may be beneficial to attack a newer piece of equipment that does have problems. We never want to do a proof of value on a piece of equipment that runs flawlessly, right? That just doesn't make any sense. So we'd like to pick something that is got an issue. Maybe it's a process issue. Maybe it's a quality issue. Maybe it's who knows what. While the rest of the plan is catching up to the modern technology, right? So you've got a newer or a new piece of equipment, or launch is even an unbelievable awesome place to start too, because everybody in the auto world talks about launch issues like crazy. If you can pinpoint the launch issues, it makes that launch curve go, you know, that much better while the rest of the plant catches up.
Automotive is a great place to do that because they're always launching. Just launch every month.
Right? Yeah. And there's always launch issues, I'm sure. Yes.
Always.
Yeah. Well, awesome. What is sort of your take, Remus and Matt and Greg, on the future of how manufacturers can best leverage their culture to scale their digital transformation?
Well, I think if the last 2 years is any indication of where manufacturing is going, obviously it's good news for folks like us that live in that space, right? I think we've seen a ton of interest in it, right? You know, I saw just the other day that one of the directors at Siemens that leads their I4O strategy was meeting with the White House to talk about how we can take advantage of the technology there for infrastructure, right? Our water, wastewater, our electrical grid, all that type of stuff is a place of opportunity. And obviously, you know, it's been on everybody's topic lately is the, you know, supply chain issues, right? How do we take advantage of the technology now to bolster the supply chain, get more visibility into our supply chain? So I think if the last 2 years are any indication of what's to come in technology and manufacturing, I think it's a very exciting time.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the last 2 years, as challenging as they've been, have proven that people can still work productively remotely and people can still provide value to organizations in this crazy world that we live in. It's opened up and maybe it's either forced or made people more comfortable with, or maybe it's forced the compliance or the consideration of security of how you can get that information away from the plant floor and up to, you know, to an industry 4.0 type of system that makes that information available, you know, from anywhere, from our phones, from a, you know, web browser, whatever. And I think it's great because, you know, in the event of another resurgence of COVID or, you know, the next pandemic or whatever, it's not just about, you know, people wanting to work remote, but it's keeping the people who need to be on the factory floor or in the office safe. It's, you know, one of the pitches, you know, that we gave a couple times was, again, going 20 years ago, it was like butts and chairs and you better be on the factory floor. Otherwise, you're obviously not doing anything. Now it's we're working from anywhere and there are some people that can't be remote. So let's do what we can to protect the people that need to be here and make sure that we keep them informed, working minimal amounts of people around in the event of something like a COVID outbreak again. So I think that's cool. I think it's awesome time to be working in the industry.
COVID's definitely transitioned how we all work for sure. And I think that not only, you know, to add on to what you said, Greg, I think it keeps people who need to come in safe, but also gives them visibility, gives visibility to the people that are working remotely also to the floor in real time.
Yeah, I think it brings up a topic too that I know Matt's really, really familiar with is, you know, we saw it during the start of COVID where there was a shortage of a lot of PPE equipment. So now with the additive manufacturing, 3D printing being so readily available in manufacturing, I think, you know, Matt worked on a project earlier this year that allowed state governments to rapidly deploy PPE manufacturing equipment, because all you have to do is send taking advantage of Industry 4.0 technology, send a message down to a 3D printer that might be idle in the back room somewhere to turn on and start building masks or, you know, visors or whatever it might be.
I was fortunate and infortunate enough to be part of that at the very beginning where we were building with Ford and GM ventilators, which was, you know, kind of cool and kind of scary all at the same time. But what I was going to mention on top of that is the double-edged sword of home life. You know, been doing this 30 years. You used to come to work. I'd turn my PC on. I'd be able to work. I'd walk a floor, see what happened in the last 24 hours, etc. And then when you left that, whatever time you left that and you went home,
you went home. And then when you're driving in the morning, you're like, I wonder what happened last night. What am I going to walk into today?
Right.
That's now gone because we get texts and alerts and this and that and smoke signals and all the other stuff that goes on over the night. So you now, A, on a good side, way more prepared to go to work and can potentially react from home when things are, you know, have gone awry. But you also are now working basically 24/7.
Right. It'll be interesting, like, you know, some of the European laws that basically limit, you cannot get a call, you cannot get an email, you cannot, you know, do these things off of work hours. It'll be interesting to see 5-10 years out if that becomes a worldwide trend and if we have to, you know, gosh forbid, like, turn off our alerts.
God, I don't know. Limits on that?
Yeah. Limits on, like, you know, what would I... I'm not sure what I would do at night. Like, just have to, you know,
kind of off topic of like the industry 4.0 stuff. But a challenge for me has been defining, like, because I have a home office now, right? Like, mm-hmm. like most people do, it's hard to separate being at work from not being at home. I mm-hmm. feel like I'm either at work all day long or I'm not at work at all. It just leaves you like this feeling of like, I feel like I should be doing something right now. Yeah. But yeah, it's been a pretty interesting.
It's an odd feeling.
It is really odd.
You know, and then add teams into it. So stepping away from manufacturing, more of a, you know, an office, you know, digitization, let's call it. We can now look on Teams and see if anybody's sitting at their desk working or not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you now have access to that little, you know, green light out of office. I'm in a meeting of doing whatever, mm-hmm. you know, for everybody. And it becomes, now I know that, hey, Remus is not sitting at his desk. I can, you know, now I got to send him a text or bring him, hey, how, where are you? What are you doing? It
becomes, I'm on the golf course.
Get back to work.
But in the real life, it, you know, I look at my dad, I look at when I first started, it was, you got up, you went to work, you came home and you know, you had home. That's kind of disappearing a little bit.
It's very blurry right now, that's for sure.
Yeah. My home office is in the same room as my home gym. So I just spend 8 hours a day in the gym.
Yeah, perfect.
I'm expecting I'll be like The Rock any day now. Results are bound to show up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it will be interesting in the future to see how we evolve to deal and separate with the work home life balance.
It's very bizarrely, I was watching, I record Shark Tank and I catch up on it when I can. And one of the people that were pitching on Shark Tank was a shipping container converted into a portable office space or portable whatever space. Mm-hmm. But like basically, if you didn't have an office in your house, you could lease one of these portable shipping containers that's cut in half and they ship it and they lay it on your, you know, backyard and they plug it in. And now you have a isolated work from home environment without actually being in your house. So I thought that was kind of cool.
That is neat.
Good business idea.
Right.
Otherwise, you have to build a barn dominium.
True. Well, thank you guys for being on the show today. I've learned a lot and it's been a really interesting conversational topic. So thank you, Remus. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Lexi.
Thank you. It was fun.
We look forward to hopefully talking with you and working with you again in the future.
Absolutely.